got a sprain.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining.
You could say that the existence of our great country is at least in part due to a fairly unknown disease called porphyria. And we will get to that disease itself in a few minutes. But first, we're going to explain why this particular historical fact is true.
King George III is well known in children's history books for being the Mad King.
But many historians now put his supposed madness down to the physical genetic blood disorder called porphyria.
You could even say that it is the blue urine disease, even though that is not really the most important symptoms of the disease, which also include aches and pains.
The madness of George III has even been made into a film starring Nigel Hawthorne. And although after much research, his diagnosis of porphyria is questioned, nevertheless, he has been saddled with the history of madness to this day. In an infamous book, the character Goethe lets Mephistopheles, an agent of the devil, say,
Blut ist ein ganz besonderer Saft,
which translates into, blood is a quite peculiar juice.
And with that, Faust sells his soul to the devil for knowledge and experience previously unattainable to him.
There is a genetic condition that causes victims to crave blood, and that resembles vampires, doesn't it? We all know that this has been the basis of many myths for centuries. But today we know that what makes blood special is really what it contains. And we all know that many diseases are due to either scarcity or an overabundance of certain chemicals in the human body.
And there is a component of blood that when it is deficient in amount causes a disease called porphyria, sometimes known as
vampire's disease.
So if you're not interested in learning about a rare but pretty interesting disease, then you can change channels. But believe me, if you stick it out for the next 20 minutes or so, you can sound like an expert to your friends when you tell them about that vampire disease. And it's also an unusual name for a disease, porphyria, and it comes from the components of blood and its metabolism. That chemical is porphyrin, and it's a class of natural compounds. Now, these compounds are made of four rings containing nitrogen and a central atom of metal. The chemical name of the compound is heme, from which the word hemoglobin comes. Heme is the iron porphyrin compound, which makes up the non-protein part of hemoglobin that transports oxygen to all of your cells. It is responsible for our blood's red color.
A lot goes on in our bodies when hemoglobin is created. Actually, there are 8 enzymes that promote the condensation of certain chemicals that are then followed by iron insertion to get to the final product.
Porphyrins are built up in the body cells to function as, we'll call it, prosthetic groups of many globular heme proteins. All of these chemicals, which are made from naturally occurring metalloproteins, fulfill various biological tasks in our bodies. It is not only the oxygen transporting hemoglobin that comes from all of this compound creating, but there are also other essential pigments that are made, including things such as cytochrome 450, myoglobin, neuroglobin, catalases, and peroxidases. All of these are necessary for us to maintain life. Now, if there are enzyme defects in that chemical pathway that we just spoke of, then the porphyrin precursors accumulate and are excreted by the body, but not before they become toxic to our bodies.
So, there are gene mutations which can be inherited either in dominant or recessive pattern, resulting in porphyria.
But porphyria is not one simple single disease, albeit incurable. We have only mentioned the genetic causes that are passed on as inherited traits, but also may be due to the effects of alcoholism or even lead poisoning. In this case, the chemical toxicities can be cured once identified, but unfortunately, any tissues already damaged simply cannot be reversed. People that know about their porphyria need to be informed about potential triggers that can cause an attack, such as environmental influences, stress, infection, various chemicals, as well as drugs.
And most say that it is a rare disease And although many physicians learn about the disease during medical school, many have never seen a case throughout their entire medical practice.
I just talked to a doctor friend of mine, and we were both concerned that medicine as it is practiced today may have much better equipment and more treatments and even more diagnostic tests, but really lacks the personal touch that we physicians were used to giving years ago. Often physicians, knowing that disease is rare, will not even consider that disease in their quest to find someone's actual diagnosis. So often a disease as rare as porphyria will not even be considered, again, since it is so rare.
But even in Las Vegas, the capital of U.S., gambling has probably seen its share of royal straight flushes once in a while.
Our point is that even in Las Vegas, having a straight or flush, or even a straight flush, does not necessarily mean that you're going to win. There's always that rare case of someone winning with the king of all hands, the royal straight flush. Now, don't send me emails telling me that I'm wrong, that five aces with Joker's Wild, for example, would beat it. I know that. Now, in porphyria, acute symptoms tend to present as diffuse abdominal pain and neurological dysfunctions, whereas photosensitivity corresponds with the chronic form of porphyria.
Standard testing includes biochemical and genetic methods, as well as separation of urine porphyrin using chromatography.
So before we get to the actual diagnostic tests and present-day treatments that are used, let me just tell you that in the past, the only way porphyria patients could ease their pain was by, and you heard me right, drinking blood and avoiding sunlight. Apparently, they may have also reacted with high sensitivity to garlic, which actually contains sulfur-containing ingredients that, well, naturally inhibit natural heme synthesis and accelerate hemoglobin degradation, which does worsen porphyria outbreaks. Now, the next question is, just what symptoms do we look for in porphyria?
The common physical traits of people with porphyria include pale skin, pronounced teeth, and excessive hair growth in the face, as well as deformities on the fingers, ears, and nose.
Those symptoms may have, again, fueled the mystery of vampires and werewolves. Although those creatures never really existed, victims of porphyria may have served as inspiration for Bram Stoker's world-famous Dracula and the movie classics such as Nosferatu. And when we think of Dracula, we have to think of the King of Wallachia. Never heard of Wallachia? Well, in 1859, Wallachia united with Moldavia to form Romania. Later, certain areas like Bukovina, Banat, Crișana, and Maramureș were allocated to the Kingdom of Romania, forming the modern Romanian state, as well as, by the way, an area actually called Transylvania. Does the name ring a bell? Anyway, Transylvania was the home, if I remember, of Dracula in the movie of the same name with the actor Bela Lugosi.
Perhaps the name Dracula comes from the king of Wallachia, whose name was Vlad Tepes, also called Vlad the Impaler.
He was the second son of Vlad Dracul, so we can say where the name Dracula may have come from. Anyway, Vlad III may also have had acute porphyria, which could have started the notion that vampires were allergic to sunlight. And we all know that, right? There were always real patients forced to live with the porphyria, even when it was not understood as a disease at all. Now, there are some famous cases that have been linked to porphyria, such as Prince William of Gloucester, a paternal cousin of the present British Queen Elizabeth II. As such, he was also descended from King George III.
Historians long hypothesized that his madness may have been due to an undiagnosed family history of porphyria. However, all available evidence in his case appear not to support such a diagnosis.
In recent times, Paula, the daughter of the Chilean novelist Isabel Allende, fell into and died from a coma triggered by porphyria, a tragedy prompting her mother to write an autobiographical book about her loss and laments. Now, getting back to the diagnosis of porphyria, flow cytometry may be utilized as a detection tool for red blood cell precursors, although this technology does not play a role in actually diagnosing patients routinely.
What is most often used is a screening known as the Watson-Schwartz test. This test can be a quick indicator for a suspected porphyria.
The test relies on detecting something called porphobilinogen, or PBG, in a urine sample. If the results turn red, then PBG is present. Though uncurable, porphyrias can be managed. And one of the problems in diagnosis, apart from its rarity, is that it can easily be confused with other diseases, such as some of the autoimmune conditions.
Porphyria refers to a group of disorders that result from a buildup of natural chemicals that produce porphyrin in your body.
Porphyrins are essential for the function of hemoglobin. Again, a protein in your red blood cells that links to porphyrin binds iron and carries oxygen to your organs and tissues. And high levels of porphyrins can cause significant problems. Now, there are two general categories of porphyria. The first one is called acute, which mainly affects the nervous system. And the second is called cutaneous, which mainly affects the skin.
And there are also some types of porphyria that have both nervous system symptoms and skin symptoms.
Some people with the gene mutations that cause porphyria never have any symptoms, and they go through life never being diagnosed. Acute intermittent porphyria is the more common form of acute porphyria, and the signs and symptoms may include severe abdominal pain, leg, chest, and back pain, constipation and diarrhea, nausea and vomiting, as well as muscle pain, along with tingling, numbness, weakness, or paralysis.
As we said before, there can be red or brown urine, and of course, the infamous mental changes such as anxiety, confusion, hallucinations, disorientation, or paranoia.
There can also be breathing problems as well as urinary problems. Also heart palpitations, high blood pressure, and seizures.
This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. Hello, I'm Dr. Harold Lasky. I have been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 34 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Tulsa Welding School and the old Pottsburg Post Office. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains.
We are proud to welcome to Southside Medical Center Dr. Susan Pollan, MD, a board-certified pain specialist.
Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care.
Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show. Now we come to the cutaneous porphyrias that are due to the increased sensitivity to sunlight. This is the form called porphyria cutanea tarda, and again, it is the most common form of porphyria.
So, as a result of sun exposure, a person with PCT may have sensitivity not only to the sun, but sometimes to artificial light as well, with burning pain in the skin.
Sometimes there is even erythema, meaning skin redness, along with edema and swelling. There may even be blisters on the exposed skin, usually on the hands, face, and arms. The skin may be fragile with changes in skin color, as well as itching, excessive hair growth in affected areas, and just like the other porphyrias, red or brown urine. Now, getting back to the causes of the genetic type.
Porphyria is due to what is called an autosomal dominant inheritance pattern. That means that if one of your parents carries the gene, then you have about 50% chance of getting it.
Porphyria is due to the abnormality of production of heme, which is a component of hemoglobin, which is part of your red blood cells. Now, where does all of this occur?
Well, heme is produced in your bone marrow and liver. There is simply a shortage of a specific enzyme which then determines the type of porphyria.
Now, I have to say that although it is caused by a dominant gene, it does not mean that just because you inherit a gene or genes that can cause porphyria that you'll have signs and symptoms. You might have what's called latent porphyria and never have symptoms. This is actually the case for most carriers of the abnormal genes.
There are certain triggers that impact enzyme production. This includes too much iron in the body, liver disease, estrogen medication, smoking, or excessive alcohol use. All of these can cause symptoms of porphyria.
A person with porphyria during an attack can experience the dehydration, the breathing problems, seizures, and high blood pressure. And sometimes this necessitates hospitalization. Long-term complications with recurrent acute attacks can include chronic pain, chronic kidney failure, and liver damage.
And cutaneous porphyrias can result in permanent skin damage. Also, the skin blisters can become infected.
Treatments may include injections of a medication called hemin, which is a form of heme. Now, this is done to limit the body's production of porphyrin. Remember that porphyrins are used by the body in the production of heme. If there is enough heme, then the body slows its own hemoglobin production, and therefore less porphyrin is produced. Also, intravenous sugar called glucose, or sugar taken by mouth, is given in order to maintain an adequate intake of carbohydrates.
Just 2 years ago, the medication called givosiran, brand name Givalari, was approved by the FDA. It is given as a monthly injection for adults with acute hepatic porphyria to reduce the number of porphyria attacks.
But there are side effects of these treatments, which includes, but are not limited to, nausea, liver and kidney toxicity, and a small risk of anaphylaxis, which means allergic reaction, and can be life-threatening. The treatment of cutaneous porphyrias focuses on reducing exposure to the triggers, such as sunlight, and reducing the amount of porphyrins in your body to eliminate the symptoms. So periodically, drawing blood may be performed to reduce the iron in the body, and this does help decrease the porphyrin.
And then there are the drugs that are most often used to treat malaria, Plaquenil and Adderall. These seem to help absorb excess porphyrins and rid the body of the porphyrin more quickly.
A dietary supplement to replace vitamin D deficiency caused by avoidance of sunlight may be prescribed as well. For many with the disease, these treatments are either out of reach financially or simply inadequate. The European Porphyrin Network published an excellent article on their recommended treatment plan, and we'll start with their treatment of the acute attack.
First, they require a valid diagnosis of an acute attack of porphyria. We have already talked about that at the beginning of the show. Using urine porphobilinogen or PBG concentration before starting specific treatment with human hemin. This is essential in patients without a previous diagnosis of acute porphyria.
However, for patients who have had an unequivocally diagnosed porphyria attack in the past, it may be necessary to start specific treatments before the results of the laboratory investigations are available. The doctor will stop all drugs that are considered not safe in porphyria, and the patient must be treated for any infections. Supportive treatments must be given, for example, treatments of the pain, which could necessitate the use of morphine, for example, and vomiting, and, well, that can be treated with prochlorperazine, ondansetron, promazine, or cyclozine, while agitation, another symptom, can be minimized by using chlorpromazine, hydroxyzine, or oxazepam. Now, there are drugs for convulsions that can be used, and other drugs for the hypertension and the racing of the heart, such as bisoprolol, atenolol, and labetalol. Constipation, well, it can be controlled with the normal treatments such as Senna and some of the bulk laxatives.
The European Porphyrin Network suggested that the opiates are the most effective analgesic for use in an acute attack and should be used only for the duration of the pain and stopped before discharge from the hospital.
When treating the chronic neuropathic pain, it is recommended that other pain relievers be used, such as the gabapentinoids. Now, one of the most important things that can be done for the patient in the hospital is to maintain the patient's fluid balance, so the doctor must carefully manage fluid balance and yet avoid giving large amounts of hypotonic dextrose. This is necessary in order to minimize the risk of severe lowering of sodium in the body, which may actually provoke convulsions.
This lowering of the sodium is called hyponatremia, and it is often seen in acute porphyria attacks. It is due to a number of factors that are caused by kidney and gastrointestinal losses, as well as the syndrome of inappropriate secretion of hormone called antidiuretic hormone.
Now, you may have been wondering why giving sugar is so important as part of the treatment regimen. And that's because impaired nutrition may actually aggravate the acute porphyria. It is important for the patient to get enough calories, and it's usually given by nasogastric tube in the hospital.
Again, the cardiovascular complications, including hypertension and tachycardia, are rarely severe enough to require a specific treatment, but occasionally are needed.
Now let's talk quickly about human hemin, the mainstay of treatment. The average annual cost for hemin was $44,223 for treatment of attacks and $88,964 for preventive therapy, while the annual average total cost was $100,000. $114,000 for acute care and $188,000 for all causes.
Then again, for all patients with acute intermittent porphyria, the average annual total cost of care with Heerman was 78% lower than the average annual total cost of care with Givosedan.
There's a form of porphyria called erythropoietic protoporphyria, or EPP, and it's truly a rare inherited metabolic disorder characterized by a deficiency of the enzyme ferrochelatase, which causes excessive amounts of protoporphyrin to accumulate in the bone marrow, blood plasma, and the red blood cells.
The main treatment here has been avoidance of the sun, but medications such as beta-carotene, cysteine, vitamin C, and others have been tried, but nothing has proved to actually be effective here.
But hold your hats. Afamelanotide, brand name Senese, spelled S-C-E-N-E-S-S-E, that's the brand name, was recently approved by the FDA for the treatment of EPP. This drug is administered in the subcutaneous tissue, you know, just below the skin, through a large needle after numbing the area. This implant is administered once every 2 months.
It works by increasing the amount of melanin in the skin. This makes the skin darker. It may also have some anti-inflammatory properties, so patients taking this drug can spend longer time in the sun without pain.
There's also another medication called MT-7117. Too early for a brand name yet. It can be taken orally. It also works by increasing melanin in the skin and may have anti-inflammatory properties as well. Then there's congenital erythropoietic porphyria, or CEP, and this is a very rare inherited metabolic disorder resulting from a deficient function of an enzyme called uroporphyrinogen III, just another enzyme that is active in the heme metabolism problem. And it's a gene abnormality that is caused, in this case, by a recessive gene, meaning that both parents would have to have the gene and transmit it to the offspring for the child to get it, and that's why it is so rare.
Again, the result is that excessive porphyrin is produced in the bone marrow, plasma, red blood cells, urine, teeth, and bones. The major symptom of this disorder is hypersensitivity of the skin to sunlight and some types of artificial light, such as fluorescent lights.
Now, before we end the discussion of porphyria, I'd like to address a case where one doctor diagnosed a patient with porphyria, but the porphyria expert said that the patient did not have porphyria. And you might ask, why could this occur? Obviously, the situation needs to be dealt with on an individual basis, but further testing may be needed in this case, and that depends on how the patient was initially diagnosed and how the porphyria expert made the decision that porphyria is not the diagnosis.
The results of biochemical testing are sometimes interpreted incorrectly. That can be the case here.
It may be that the lab results are not consistent with what is typically seen in a patient with porphyria during an attack. Now, here the problem lies in the word typically.
The results of DNA analysis may also contribute to the porphyria expert saying that it is unlikely that the patient has porphyria.
Remember that even though DNA analysis is often considered to be the gold standard for diagnosis, it's not perfect in that the patient may have a mutation in a part of the porphyria gene that is not analyzed by routine testing, or the patient has a mutation in a porphyria gene that was simply not analyzed.
If a diagnosis of porphyria is still suspect, then it is recommended that the patients undergo additional biochemical testing at the time of an acute attack.
Additionally, further testing may include DNA analysis for other acute porphyrias, especially if only one or two were tested. You could, of course, use the duck test. That is, if it looks like a duck, swims like a duck, and quacks like a duck, then it probably is a duck, and you can go from there.
I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana.
We've come to the end of another Hey Doc show.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.